Welcome to the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast series. Our show is brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app, which allows innkeepers to provide guests with their recommendations of the best local places to eat, play, and shop during their stay. The Frictionless Guest app is accessible through all mobile and desktop devices, and you can learn more about it by visiting frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. I'm Matt Langan, and I'll be joined by Steve Short, the founder and CEO of the Frictionless Guest app. And today we're speaking with Linda Hayes, who's a renowned innkeeping industry consultant with IJK Partners, which is an affiliate with the B&B team. And Linda will be sharing her insights into her work with B&B owners and investors, as well as providing her take on where the industry is headed and much more. And Linda and Steve, how are you both doing today?
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for inviting me on this. It's going to be fun.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Steve, how are you doing?
Doing well, Matt. Thanks a lot. And thanks, Linda, for being here. We appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's kick it off. So Linda, if you don't mind, let's start with your overall background. And I know we've connected before and you talked about how you work full circle in the innkeeping world and as well as other industries. So would love to hear more about your background.
Well, thanks. It's been funny because as we talked last week and reflecting on my career, it's interesting as I look back, and my first start was a degree in interior design. And in working in that, I started in residential. I moved over to a little bit of hospitality and then on to corporate. And then I was in-house. So I actually was working for the customer and working as a client as a facility designer for a group that was the oldest savings and loan bank in South Florida. Well, they were oldest in the nation, but they were in South Florida. And that was challenging. It was a lot of fun dealing with needs and hierarchy and experiences and pleasing an internal customer. Then I actually went to work for the dealership who provided the furniture, and I was head of design and then moved into sales. And then ultimately, I worked for that manufacturer, Steelcase, a Fortune 500 company, and I was a senior account rep for Southern Florida and Caribbean. So when I talk about the first full circle experience, here I had been the designer, and then I was the customer, and then I was the dealer, and then I was the manufacturer. And it really gave me this wonderful appreciation and respect, I think, when I was calling on people and trying to understand what their needs were and the kind of experience that I could deliver. So then, of course, I leave and I build an inn, and my husband and I become innkeepers. And lo and behold, I also tend to do things in sevens, which is an interesting thing. So we owned our inn for a little over 7 years. We also then had a restaurant that we were the owners, but then we operated it. I did a little bit of part-time sales for the Comfy Company, which actually is a manufacturer of spa and bed linens. And then now I'm a consultant. So again, I go back and kind of look at that full circle and really think that brings the perspective that I offer to the client because I've been in many of the roles. So it's funny as I can go back on my first career and then my second career, and actually my first career plays in with many of my clients. So that's what I mean by full circle.
That's great. That's great. And that's a perfect segue into our next question. So you have worked full circle in the innkeeping world. I'm sure that certainly helps a lot with your consulting services and would love to hear more about your services.
Well, it's since selling our inn in 2010, I worked, you know, a number of people reached out and they saw the success that we had with our inn and they said, gosh, can you help me too? Help me with some operational things. What are your shortcuts? What are the things that are working? So in the past 9 years, I've worked with many investors and owners and managers actually across the nation, now even in Mexico, helping them with their properties and staff. I've been doing a little behind-the-scenes work with the B&B team for probably about 6 years, and then 4 years ago, they asked me to be an official affiliate. So I work with them a lot of the general inquiries that come in, and they actually come in across the world because we've been out there for 25 years. I'm responding to those and helping them. In many cases, it certainly is a pro bono thing of just trying to guide them and give them some assistance. But many are building, renovating properties. Some are just beginning a search. Some want to expand their properties. They want to add staff, and they need guidance. So it's really nice that the role I can play within the team, since the rest of the members of the team are primarily brokers, realtors, they're working with a client as they're buying a property or as they're selling a property, and I'm kind of embracing the middle ground. So where they've got an operational question or they're uncertain about something, you know, they'll go ahead and tap in with me. And so I've got ongoing clients that I've worked with for 5 and 6 years that I call my annuity clients. And then some that I may just be involved in their process for a few months guiding them, but they tend to know that I'm there if they have a burning question. I've got a favorite client who will just text me sometimes, and he's got four questions, and I've got an hour to prepare, and I think he's just looking for validation. So much of what I do, I feel like I'm an in psychologist or a bit of a coach, but it's fun. It's fun.
That's great. And you know, you touched on something we've never really talked about in our previous podcast, which is your focus on the owner investors and that side and startups as well. So tell us more about this space. This is all kind of new to us.
Well, we never expected that we would do a startup. In 2002, when we were looking, there certainly was a lot of inventory and a lot of ins. And we ended up coming up to the New River Valley in Virginia and looked at a property that just wasn't what we wanted and found a beautiful piece of land and thought, well, I have a design background. I'm not afraid of starting a business. So we embraced that. So the fact that we could do it, then we felt we could maybe help others do it. So a lot of the involvement that we get that I work with certainly is, you know, the owner investor side where there's probably something special about a property that might be in the area that they live. They've got a connection to it. It might be something that's going to be an adaptive reuse or revitalization. And in many cases, they're never going to operate it, but they certainly want to own it. Some have construction backgrounds. They're going to renovate it. So they're looking for some guidance on best practices. So I get involved certainly with that. I work with some who are going to operate their inn. But in many cases, when I go back now and look at the range of clients, a lot of them, you know, they probably never cooked in their kitchen. They slept in their rooms. So a couple of examples. There's a gentleman who's rezoning a large church up in western New York. He hopes it to become a beautiful event center, a restaurant, and a boutique hotel. And he's still going to work with the church officials who will have some offices and use the chapel. So it's kind of a fun space to think about that beautiful church sanctuary that now will be this beautiful event center. I've seen some renderings and they're gorgeous. There's an attorney who's a court-appointed receiver for a beautiful stone building that's in Kansas. And because it's a college town, we're looking at some lodging options that might make sense for this foundation to be able to bring back a return to this building, preserve it as far as its historic value to the community, but yet be maybe a viable live-work play space for either something campus-related or a B&B. So it's kind of interesting to see those what's happening and the viability of lodging. The other thing that I've created is a future innkeeper hands-on workshop. So as we talk about people who are doing startups, some of them, they've only seen the magic of staying in an inn. So to be able to come to a property to actually work the different opportunities there, to work in the kitchen, to serve breakfast, to prepare breakfast, to see the hours that are involved, to do housekeeping, to do check-ins, to rotate and see the magic versus in what we just show the guests is a good chance for them to begin to visualize what their job might be. So in those 4 years that we've had the boot camps, with doing numbers, we've had about 60 candidates from 13 states and two countries, and 26 of them by the end of this year will have their properties and they'll be open as owners. So it's fun to really see that happen. The last boot camp was fun because here was a case of adaptive reuse. There's a couple buying a church in Tennessee, and the other ones have bought a 1905 schoolhouse in Iowa. Imagine with cloakrooms and everything, and then they're converting those into inns. So some fun there. Got another interesting story that I want to share is I'm working with an owner investor who they own summer camps. So they own six summer camps. They use them for weddings. So think about, you know, if you ever went to camp, you might have met the love of your life at camp, and maybe you proposed at camp, and some people want to come back and have their wedding at camp. So not only do they use the camp for off-season for weddings, they've bought two inns near the camp. So it was fun to be able to come and consult with them about the lodging aspect versus the camp aspect that they offer. So I never know who's going to call. They're all different.
I love the reuse and the fact that, you know, the preservation side of things, being able to save and keep up, you know, old buildings, old structures. When you're doing projects like that, are you heavily involved in the design of transforming it, I guess I would say, into what the vision is? Talk about that, because I think you were saying when we spoke before that you're kind of involved really with the whole sort of strategic thing in some cases. In other words, what might we use this for? If so, how do we design it? Talk about the whole process and how heavily you are or can get involved in that process of, you know, starting from the idea all the way through to the execution and getting it up and running?
In most cases, there are team members. And I think because I have this design and land planning kind of understanding and background, it plays a valuable tool there. And I can think outside the box, and I've had a restaurant and I've had an inn. So that's helpful. And usually the client is coming to me and they've already got the thought in mind that they're thinking about this as a lodging property. And then I'm questioning them on what's the zoning look like? What's the restrictions on health department? There's a property in North Carolina that I worked with, and I constantly sent them back to the town. The town was begging to have this entity become a lodging property, but they were putting such restrictions on them that they couldn't do very much food and beverage. They wouldn't be able to offer afternoon teas, yet the Historical Society wanted them to be there. And I really, really pushed them to go back to those town people and say, okay, let's talk about other ordinances and other areas that are permissive. Why are they restricting you? So sometimes I'm playing devil's advocate to the client to give them enough ammunition, maybe about things I know in other communities, to go back and fight so that they've got a viable lodging property. I've got another big project, which I can't talk a lot about as far as who the client is, but there's a working with an owner who has homes in different parts of the world. He doesn't live in the U.S. all the time, but he's got a beautiful family compound that he is thinking, why can't I open this up to the public? Certainly, as many of us have traveled, if we've stayed in a castle, maybe in Ireland, it was someone's home at some point, or we stayed in other places that were beautiful, small boutique properties. So in this case, I'm working with the land planner, the architect, the engineers, as we work as a team to look at if this is going to be kind of an all-inclusive upscale lodging property, what are the amenities and things that we need to offer? Do we want a day spa that can be open to the community? Do we need a dining building that we can have fine dining, or what's the meal plan going to be? What do the lodging spaces look like, and are they truly suitable for the price point that we're hoping to yield? So I guess the answer to your question is yes, I can play a lot of different roles. I look at that I'm the connector. It's kind of in my tagline of connecting the dots between dreams and reality, is I'm bringing in a spa consultant. I brought Julie Pankey in to work on a project. I'm bringing in an event consultant. So I'm bringing in people who have that specific expertise at times and trying to guide everybody through the process. So again, I find it exciting to see how many people are reaching into our niche of the smaller properties and wanting, as you mentioned, you know, Steve, maybe doing adaptive reuse, bringing back something that's a viable part of a community, or creating something that's going to be new. And, you know, they're looking all the way around for financially, does this make sense? Is this the best use of my cash? Are there investment opportunities out there? All those different ramifications. So it's intriguing. It's fascinating. It's not as simple, maybe, as everyone might think.
Yeah, it sounds like you wear a lot of hats, I guess you'd say, and that probably does keep things interesting for you. But also, it sounds like there's a real need out there because, yeah, if you are a owner, investor, and you're starting something new, you need somebody to kind of manage it all, but also who can kind of, at 30,000 feet, can look down and say, okay, well, it's not just as simple as let's restore the building. You know, there's
right.
So many things going on there that might play into the original idea of what to do and how to do it and all of those things, whether it comes down to local restrictions, like you said, or something else that might play into the whole thing. And
who's that target audience and are they going to come? You know, that was probably what my husband questioned the most when we were building our inn is, oh my gosh, we're going to build this. $1 million project, and we're going to build it, and will they come? Well, they certainly did. You know, we were very busy very quickly, but again, we were embracing all the different aspects, and that's what I tell, especially owner investors, you know, you've got to control two things. Even if you're going to have a manager running your property, you still have to control the marketing message, and by all means, you have to control the bookkeeping and finances. But that marketing message and always knowing that you're looking 3 to 6 months to a year out on who are your audiences and what are you offering at your property and how are you going to get them there? And, you know, old-fashioned marketing where you're getting written up in articles, so you're getting true PR that's not paid advertising. So I think for people who have had a vibrant career and now they're switching into this, what's fun is I think the fact that we do wear a lot of hats is really nice. And we are seeing hoteliers that have maybe only had one particular job at a hotel property now coming in wanting to work in inns or own inns or be managers for owners because they want to be able to do more. They want to take maybe a specific area of expertise that they have, but now they want to blend it in with the rest. So it's been nice to see some of that, that we've seen people who have had great background and corporate training from a lot of the big hotel brands, and now they're coming into our small niche.
Going down market, interesting. But having to learn a whole lot more than what they learned in the bigger, I guess, hotel brand world, right?
Well, it's not a shift job. That's for say. When you become an innkeeper, you know, you better be embracing. It's not a 9-to-5. It's going to have variables to that. We still need a life balance, but you've got to have some flexibility. So, you know, Monday, Tuesday certainly have to be your weekends, not Saturday, Sunday. That's for guests.
Yeah, I can relate. I'm sure all of us can, as far as having our own businesses and the fact that, there is no 9-to-5.
Right.
You bounce around and your schedule is based upon your customers and your needs, their needs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you've got to flex with that. Sometimes that's the hard thing for people, you know, so therefore it's time, you know, I'm working with a couple right now and I know their lives are much more Monday through Friday and they're buying a property and there is some existing staff there, one being a manager. And they said, should we really try hard to keep the manager? I said, absolutely. She knows the property first, you know, and how are you going to have some time off? So by keeping that manager in her role as much as you can try to do that, gives them some balance to the new life, especially if they're buying a property in October, which most of us in October at about 99% occupancy. I'd want as many experienced hands on deck that I could afford.
Right. Well, and that's the thing too. And you talk about the boot camp. So you're not just into new projects, getting things up and running, but you're also heavily into the operational side, best practices, those sort of things as well, right? Talk about what you do and that side of your consulting.
Well, I have got a lot of forms and templates, and you know, the key is having a good operating binder. So that's essential. So I've got a lot of shared Google Docs that I'll guide a new someone buying an inn or starting an inn because they need an operational manual. At some point, they might sell their inn, or at some point, someone's going to come and run their inn while they're on vacation. So having things written down and set up are key to be able to understand best practices and how do you turn a room quickly yet make sure you've done it thoroughly. What are the shifts in the day and who's going to own a certain shift and how do you break that out to balance staff? So from creating a lot of these things in our own business, it's been great to be able to share some things and to help people. I find as much as we spent 4 years wanting to be innkeepers and having time to learn the different things, certainly with owner investors, they're buying and they're jumping in. They want to be efficient on day one. There's not a ramp-up period that's effectively too long unless they're renovating a property. And we're seeing with a lot of people, they're going from career A on Friday, and then the following week they own an inn, and all of a sudden they're innkeepers. So as much as many of us can help with that transition period to give them as many shortcuts as possible, those who have a little income stream are happy to buy consulting services to help them be as on their game, as efficient, as effective, learning as much as possible as they make these transitions. So it's fun to be able to do that. In many cases, none of this is really, really hard. I think it's just for a lot of people that are new, they're uncertain, and they're looking for validation. So in many cases, that's what I'm trying to provide is to say, hey, you're on the right track. Absolutely keep going, you know, keep doing that. Or let's tweak it and go this way. Or why don't you try this process?
Yeah, interesting as far as so many things to think about. And are most of those operational sort of clients, are those mostly new innkeepers, or you know, do you sometimes have existing properties innkeepers that say, hey, I need, you know, I need some help here. Yeah, I need some organization. I need some improvement efficiencies, or maybe even, you know, other ways to strengthen revenue or anything like that.
We see all of that. We see people who they sort of, maybe they've, I don't want to say they've put their head in the sand, but maybe they haven't attended conferences. Maybe they haven't networked with other people. Maybe they're not aware of new technologies, even like products like what you offer that are out there, and they need to be inspired. So whether they're someone who is maybe looking at their exit strategy and thinking maybe in a couple of years I'm going to sell my inn, so what do I need to do now? Or my occupancy is waning. What's changing? We can usually look at a website and see, gosh, if you haven't updated your photography or changed the style of your rooms in some cases, or done a fresh new website in 5 to 10 years, you're probably dated and people are passing you over. So there's many different ways that we're coming in, especially for those who maybe are starting to burn out. And this might segue us into something we wanted to talk about was, you know, an exit, new exit strategies. And we're mm-hmm. seeing more and more people that decide, gee, I don't know what else I would do. This is a viable revenue stream, but I don't want to work so hard. I don't want to do this 7 days a week. So that's what I'm seeing now is people are saying, hey, it might be time to hire somebody. My business has gotten busy enough. Revenue is good. I can afford to give some dollars to a person to hire. So who do we hire? You know, and that's where I'm guiding them on, well, let's write a position description. What jobs are you going to give up to that person so their job is very clearly defined? How do you find that person? How do you interview them? So there's a lot of coaching there that we're doing with, you know, people who are wanting to maybe step away a little bit.
Interesting. So do you see with kind of that, I guess, partial exit strategy, are you seeing more of, I guess, the manager type that's, you know, the managing innkeeper that's not an owner? Does it seem that there's more of that going on?
There seems to be a lot of it. Okay, so as we talk about maybe a new exit strategy, and I really go back and equate it to, you know, I pretty much changed my career. I had my first career, and then now I'm into my second career, and in many cases it's a career of passion. So you're providing a guest experience to your guests. But nowadays, where we might have gotten out of corporate America, certainly standard retirement age was somewhere between 55 and 65 way back. Now, boomers are young. And so if they sell their properties now, they've got a void. They still want to be engaged. They're busy. And it's not just about travel. It's doing something. And maybe they don't want to tap into their investments. So I'm seeing that people are moving. They're moving out. They're moving out of wherever they were living at the end. They're buying a home. They're living nearby. They're hiring a manager to live on site. And I can count, oh gosh, I've probably worked with 5 different clients this year who have chosen to go that route. And now they're figuring out what are the effective shifts that they want to work. So maybe they want to meet the biggest population of the guests that are coming. So they're going to work some weekend shifts. They're going to give some of their staff some time off, or they're going to be teaming up with them. So rather than accessing Social Security, pensions, 401ks, or maybe they're accessing a little bit of that, they've got a little bit of a balance now. Many of them have grandkids. It's time to go see grandkids. It's time to engage with family. It's time to travel. But they don't necessarily want to sell their inn, or in some cases, maybe they've been on the market and their inn hasn't sold. So this gives that way where you're not totally burning out. So we're actually going to create a boot camp for managers, because there's a lot of people who can't afford to buy an inn. They don't know that they want to own it, but I tell them they can provide a valuable service to owners who are looking for that person who has that same passion for hospitality and wants to do a great job for the owner. So we're mm-hmm. seeing that. And then we're seeing a younger audience that's buying inns. Many of them are full service. I just worked with a couple up in the Adirondacks that thought this investment looked good on paper. She works for IBM. They bought a property that has a restaurant and a beautiful wine cellar, and hired a manager to come in and run it for them, and they'll come up as they can, mostly weekends, to work with it, and they'll work on the bigger picture of it. Maybe at some point they'll run it full-time, but they bought it more as an investment. So interesting, because they just had a brand new baby. They're in their 30s. So it's interesting. It's not the model that maybe we saw before of someone, golden parachute, you know, early retirement, things like that, and they're going to get out, and they're going to retire, and this is what they're going to do for the next 20 years. There's changes. Mm-hmm. There are certainly some of those wonderful people who have been innkeepers and for many, many years. In fact, many of them, this is the only business they've known. This has been their career. They might be on their third inn, but I don't find that mm-hmm. to be the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a podcast with, I think Kenny Ball is her name, and she's a manager but not an owner, which seemed a little unusual, but now it sounds like maybe that's the trend. Talk a little bit about if you are an owner investor or an owner operator that wants to, you know, kind of put less time into the facility and is looking for a manager. This seems so risky. It's make or break kind of thing. What do you look for in a manager? I mean, are you looking for experience?
Yeah, we're looking for experience.
Mindset or,
yeah, definitely experience. I mean, you're looking for someone who has worked in hospitality. And they've worked in small lodging. They've come from a hotel. But I know I've had some mm-hmm. people who just say, well, I'm going to, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be a manager. And I say to them, well, do you know what to do at 7 o'clock or 11 o'clock or 3 o'clock intuitively? You know, go do something to learn that. Volunteer and work at an inn, work at something in your area and get qualified on that. My husband and I, we were in sitting. I used to travel and stay at B&Bs before we, when I was in corporate America. And I remember that owner of that inn saying, hey, I know you want to be an innkeeper and I want to take a vacation, so come run my inn. I was scared to death. So I came up and shadowed him for a weekend, and then we became his inn sitters when I could take off from my corporate job and I could work at his inn, which gave me great experience in running an inn. And then we actually were inn sitters. So there are inn sitters that will come and do relief shifts when you want to go away, or they'll even, you know, inn sit for your managers if that's the case. But then there definitely are inn managers. And I look for somebody if they've got some hotel background or if they've come from a larger property. There's many, many good people out there that have worked for different inns and they do a great job. You know, they care about that. They've got that heart of hospitality, but they just really would rather worry about the day-to-day business than the financials and the marketing side of it, which is what their owners are worrying about. So I know we've seen, and I have a number of clients that have found some great managers that are going to be running their properties.
Great.
And for managers, it might be a step to ownership, might be a good way. But you mentioned risk. And I think if you're vetting them, if you're checking references, if you're truly seeing that they've got the background they say they do, you know, I think the risk isn't as difficult as one might think. You do background checks. You know, you do what you do as any employment situation. That's where you have to take the emotion out of it and look at it pragmatically on paper. Is this person really qualified? You know, you bring them up to your inn as part of the interview process and you have them work for a day or two so they shadow you and they truly get an idea of what's going to happen. And then you train them.
Excellent stuff. Matt, questions?
Great. Thanks, Stephen. I just wanted to see kind of overall, and I think we probably covered off on this a lot in this interview, but just in general, kind of big picture, where do you see the innkeeping industry heading today, Linda?
I think it's fascinating because I think, you know, certainly for the first time, we've got five generations traveling and they're all seeking experiences. So whether it's people that are older than all of us, even my father is still traveling in his 90s and the uniqueness of where he wants to go, all the way down to, I think I just heard it as the Gen A. I think that we're going to go, we've ended the alphabet with XYZ and we're going to go to A. Some of those are the ones in middle school and high school that are telling their parents what kind of an experience they want to have on their vacation, which I think is fascinating. But we've got a lot of generations traveling. They're all looking for experience-based travel. In some cases, it's the most remote place in the world. So as much as we all want to go to the cities that we've always heard about, the places that we know have wonderful museums and other kinds of experiences, in some cases, people want to go to something unique in the woods, unique on a beach. You never know. So I think it's interesting to me to watch, and because it's so public, we can watch the hotel industry and what they're doing. So we can see them embrace this growth. And, you know, at some point, there's only so many. I'm going to pick on Holiday Inn and the brand there. There's only so many Holiday Inns that you can build. There's a saturation there. So in some cases, we're seeing these hotel brands add different kinds of experiences to be able to tap into all those markets. I've recently listened to Stephen Taylor, who's the chief marketing officer of Accor, on a Skiff webinar that he did, and he was talking about we are no longer the merchants of sleep. And I thought, oh, gosh, that's perfect for our niche of lodging because we've always promoted our uniqueness as lodging. We've always talked about the experience of coming to a small inn. But as we look at Accor Hotel and what they're doing, they've acquired hostels. They've acquired some very hip boutique hotels, all the way to some full-service things, typically a little bigger than the inns that we have in our niche. But again, smaller properties, and they're really trying to reach all those different audiences that are out there. So rather than building all of them and having competing inventory, in some cases they're buying those properties and adding them to their portfolio. So I think all of that's intriguing, and I think certainly, you know, Airbnb's pushed the envelope by bringing access to any kind of lodging. You know, what we thought was couch surfing initially with them is now, you know, if we talk about, they're probably one of the biggest OTAs, online travel agencies out there, and the variety of lodging property that they promote is, to me, what the generations of traveling are seeking. So now they've brought that very visible, causing, I think, everyone to step up their game, you know, and to figure out truly what is my uniqueness as the property that I have. How do I get that out there to the audience I'm seeking? So it's a fascinating time. But the great thing, we go back and look at, you know, B&Bs, we've always been unique. Inns have always been unique. We're not a cookie cutter. There's certainly some things that we do in a similar way. You know, obviously we're merchants of sleep, you know, to go back and quote Stephen, but we offer breakfast. You know, we offer some other experiences. We might curate the things that you want to do when you're here, but because we're local owners who live at our properties, we understand the local experience best. So it's just, I think it's a wonderful time for our industry, provided the economy stays solid, travel's good. And whether it's local, whether it's afar, I think our niche is still very valid. So that's my crystal ball, my two cents on what I see happening.
That was awesome. Yeah, Merchants of Sleep. That's a really interesting one. And Gen A. Never heard of that one either. So
yeah, I just saw that somewhere, and they were talking about Gen A being those up and rising, because I didn't know what we were going to do with Gen X and Gen Y and where we were going. So I heard it was whether, you know, Gen A is coming. So I think that's what's fun, is to see all these layers and all this stuff. And, you know, we can watch it so much, as certainly with the proliferation of podcasts and webinars and things that you're doing. You know, there's so much information. So I love the research side of it. Yeah, Merchants of Sleep. I really appreciated that he categorized what lodging has historically been. You know, we look at hotels now. And while always, you know, before, way back, the hotel lobby bar was important, that's come back as being a valid thing. I watch some of the hotels now that have fitness centers that typically have been empty during the day, and they're now letting people who live in apartment complexes that might be adjacent come and have a membership at that fitness center. So by getting more and more people coming into their hotel lobbies and into their spaces, I think they're hoping they build brand loyalty, that if you're using the Marriott next door because that's where you're meeting someone to have a drink, or you're using their open lobby space and doing a casual meeting there or using their fitness center, maybe you'll be loyal in Marriott's. It's just, I love to see when, you know, we're taking more and more spaces that might have been just pass-through spaces, and now we're looking at the revenue that we can generate out of those spaces, and how do we bring more people into our properties, and, you know, how do we just continue to exist? It's a fascinating time. You can see I get all excited about it. This is why I still do what I do, when many of my friends are going, why aren't you retired? And it's like, oh, I'm not ready.
That's awesome. Steve, are we ready for the wrap up? Anything else to add, question, or do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Linda's given us a lot of info and a lot of neat things and cool stuff to talk about, think about. So no, let's wrap it up.
Let's fire away. All right, Linda. So this is our usual one at the end here. Anything else to add? Anything we may have missed before we sign off?
Oh, gosh, I just hope that, you know, I appreciate what you guys are doing with podcasts. I hope this little tidbit here that we've done today maybe inspires your listeners to keep moving with their properties, keep moving them forward, keep thinking outside the box, which I know is a term that's been used so many times, but I think it's applicable. You know, keep on thinking about what they're offering and how can they get their life balance and what do they need to do. And the good news is, you know, we're owners of these properties. We can make changes immediately. Ask our guests what they want, you know, and just don't sit still. Just keep moving. I think it's a good industry. It's fun. Usually we're offering positive experiences. So I just hope your audience will, you know, think a bit about what they're doing and what's making them happy. And if it's not making them happy, then make a change.
What a great way to end this interview. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive podcast with Linda Hayes, who's a renowned innkeeping industry consultant with IJK Partners, which is an affiliate with the B&B team. And as you heard, Linda was kind enough to share her insights into overall B&B trends, as well as the trend of owner investors coming into this very unique space that we talked about. And we really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Frictionless Innkeeper podcast, brought to you by the Frictionless Guest app. If you wish to learn more, please visit frictionlessguest.com. Once again, that's frictionlessguest.com. And Steve and Linda, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you, Linda. We appreciate it as well.